transferred to Gitmo. All five men were tortured. Muhammad was subjected to interrupted drowning, commonly called waterboarding, 183 times, as well as other torture and abuse approved under the George W. Bush administration's enhanced interrogation program. Awasi suffered from a shredded rectum resulting from torture. As recently as December 2017, United Nations Special Rapporteur Neil Meltzer warned that al-Baluchi was still being tortured at Guantanamo. The defendant's treatment is thoroughly documented in a 2014 Senate Intelligence Committee report on post-9/11 CIA torture, which found that many innocent individuals were wrongfully detained due to mistaken identity and faulty intelligence. The detainees were subjected to horrific and even deadly abuse, and that the brutality and scope of the program were hidden from key government officials. The report also raised serious doubts about al-Hawasi's guilt. However, in December 2012, then-presiding Judge James L. Pohl prohibited all testimony related to the defendant's capture, imprisonment, and torture, and according to a May 2016 court filing, the Army colonel conspired with military prosecutors to destroy evidence in Muhammad's case. Several Gitmo prosecutors have resigned over what they said is a corrupt military commission system designed to convict every defendant. Former lead prosecutor Colonel Maurice Davis called the trials rigged from the start and said he was told by a top Bush lawyer that acquittals were unacceptable. At least four other military prosecutors requested removal from the military commissions because they felt the proceedings were unfair. Alka Pradhan, a U.S. human rights attorney who has represented Guantanamo prisoners and other torture victims, called the Gitmo Military Commission's purpose-built to launder the CIA torture program. Of the approximately 780 men and boys imprisoned at Guantanamo since 2002, 39 remain following last month's transfer of 56-year-old Moroccan detainee Abdul Latif Nasser, who was jailed for 19 years without charge or trial. Of the 39, 28 have never been charged with crimes over nearly two decades of imprisonment. Daphne Abiathar, director of the Security with Human Rights Program at Amnesty International USA, said in a statement recently, two decades after the attacks of September 11th were carried out, the survivors and their families have yet to see any justice, reparation, or accountability for that heinous crime. Rather than fair and transparent trials, the military commissions created at Guantanamo Bay have been a dismal failure, denying survivors and their families justice, skirting United States and international law, and abusing the rights of those who remain imprisoned at the facility.
Around the World with Reporters. It's
Israeli arms firms with special relationships to Britain might seek to profiteer from a possible new refugee crisis following the West's chaotic retreat from Afghanistan. This was the warning issued by co-founders of the UK-based Palestine Action Group, who have long fought to shut down the UK branches of Elbit Systems, a notorious Israeli weapons manufacturer.
We've seen what's happened recently as well with, I think it was 800 people who entered this country, and there's talks of, you know, taking them back, etc., but or stopping them from coming here in the first place. This is the technology that they will be using to try and stop people from seeking safety after many of these people have gone through war, have seen their communities destroyed, so companies like Elbit can profit.
Debates over the UK's commitment to refugees and treatment of illegal entry to the UK has resurfaced in recent weeks, with the government introducing stricter measures to halt illegal channel crossings of desperate refugees fleeing war zones. In past years, Britain has already purchased Israeli-built drone technology to track illegal entry attempts, with further purchases on the horizon.
It's been battle-tested, proven how it works in Gaza. So the same technology which is used to harass and surveil Palestinians. The UK are not only hosting Elbit sites to produce these drones, but they're actually making contracts to buy these very same drones in order to surveil the channel to stop migrants and refugees from seeking safety in this country. If you see someone about to be hurt, most people would step in the way. And that applies when we know that these weapons being produced here will be used to kill other people who, in a lot of circumstances, are powerless to what that weapon can do.
Both France and the United Nations have expressed grave concern at the UK's new tactics, which they feel could lead to many needless drownings in the English Channel, while Israel's arms industry is providing Britain the tools it needs in order to hunt down these vulnerable vessels. That's just another reason why Palestine Action feels so determined to see Elbit shut down. Robert Carter, Leicester.
After some 13 months of a deadlock in the country and a descending multifaceted crisis, Lebanon saw the birth of a new cabinet led by Najib Miqati. Miqati stressed that he will do everything in his power to stop Lebanon's collapse.
The situation is difficult but not impossible to deal with if we cooperate together as Lebanese. We need to work hand in hand. Today, the president and I work on forming this cabinet, and it is not perfect, but only God is perfect. I can assure you that we are a team and we will work as one until we stop all the despair. I will leave at nothing to contact all international organizations to try to provide the minimum of good living and at least stop the collapse.
Lebanon's new prime minister urged the political groups to cooperate and give this government confidence to work as a team. President Michelon told reporters off camera that the new government will begin addressing the concerns of the Lebanese, adding that Lebanon will get out of hell and rise from the abyss. A lineup of 24 ministers was announced on Friday from the Lebanese presidential palace.
The challenges this cabinet faces are economic, financial, monetary, and social. Therefore, it needs to hurry in putting together a salvation plan. This plan should include short-term objectives and finding quick solutions, since this cabinet has only an 8-month term and therefore cannot put long-term plans. This is possible either through talks with the International Monetary Fund or through implementing the reform plan, which was endorsed by the French initiative.
With the government now formed, the Lebanese parliament will soon convene to issue a vote of confidence for the Miqati government.
After a little over 1 month, Prime Minister Najib Miqati has finally managed to form a cabinet in accordance with President Michelon. However, the various challenges that lie ahead with regards to the socioeconomic and the financial crisis are far from over. Maryam Saleh from Baabda's presidential palace.
South Korea's weapons are rapidly advancing. Following the introduction of a larger class of submarines in 2018, the country last week test-fired a submarine-launched ballistic missile. This and other advanced weapons in development emphasize military deterrence against perceived foreign threats, including North Korea, despite calling on Pyongyang to negotiate denuclearization and arms reductions. Activists argue such policies undermine national security.
Demon-Jae-in administration introducing aggressive and advanced weapons and holding joint military drills with the U.S. hindered trust building between South Korea and North Korea, as well as the Korean Peninsula peace process. South Korea's armed forces have been pursuing long-distance capabilities, for example, with a light aircraft carrier. This aggressive arms build-up plan could intensify the arms race in Northeast.
South Korea is in the process of choosing a light aircraft carrier, with two of South Korea's major shipbuilders intensifying competition for the project. Seoul Friday also announced it would build two larger SLBM-capable submarines. Activists argue South Korea's near $50 billion defense spending should be reallocated.
People affected by the COVID pandemic have not received enough financial support. Arms spending should be reduced and taxes should be allocated for more urgent issues such as developing a sustainable economy and the environment.
South Korea's arms production is at such a scale to be considered a military-industrial complex. Many of South Korea's largest corporations are heavily invested in the industry, which carries significant economic and political influence. South Korea also recently outlined development of a bunker-busting bomb to be deployed on a ballistic missile, following an agreement with the U.S. to eliminate limits on South Korea's missile payload and range. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Speakers of parliament from around the world gather in Vienna to focus on the most urgent matter of the day, the COVID pandemic.
Most participants concluded the world has not shown competency in dealing with the COVID pandemic, with unilateral policies blocking the vital multilateralism required for joint research and the fair distribution of vaccines.
Iran is among those hardest hit by the pandemic, and the country's visiting MPs say U.S. sanctions are hampering efforts to control the virus.
The unjust sanctions that the U.S. has imposed on Iran have made us unable to import medicines and medical supplies or to take action to remedy the current situation in the country. We need to create fair and equal conditions for all, even if it's solely for the sake of controlling the virus.
Cuba was another country that complained about U.S. sanctions.
The U.S. government has been tightening the embargo that is throttling us. Even food and medicines are being kept out, and vital medical supplies are withheld.
Azerbaijan criticized the fact that some countries are stocking up on far more vaccines than their actual needs, while poorer nations are left behind. In Yemen, said the country's representative, people live amidst war, poverty, and hunger, and need vaccines as well as international assistance. To produce one kind of vaccine, the conference was told, a manufacturing company needs ingredients from 19 different countries. No one country can do this alone. So why is the technology not being shared? All hopes lie with the vaccination campaign, but will economic incentives continue to override humanitarian ones? Homolezki, Vienna.
Weeks after the fall of Kabul to the Taliban, and only a few days after the group's spokesman declared victory of Panjshir clash, the Taliban announced the lineup of its caretaker government.
Mohtaram Al-Haj Muhammad Hassan Akhund has been appointed as the acting prime minister. Mullah Abdul Ghani Baradar and Maulavi Abdus Salam Hanafi will serve as his deputies. Maulavi Muhammad Yaqub Mujahid and Al-Haj Mullah Sirajuddin Haqqani are also appointed as the acting defense and interior ministers. Maulavi Amir Khan Muttaqi serves as acting foreign minister of the caretaker government.
The declaration of the caretaker government of Taliban has sparked mixed reactions inside and abroad. Many have criticized the Taliban for not forming an inclusive government. They, for instance, argue that all members of the newly declared acting cabinet ministers are Taliban figures. Moreover, the absence of women in Taliban's caretaker government is considered as one of the other causes behind rising criticism among Afghans, especially women. In protest to the lineup of Taliban's caretaker government, Afghan women took to the streets of Kabul and voiced their anger at the absence of women in the newly declared cabinet ministers. Despite this, Taliban officials insist that they are fully committed to respect and even protect women's rights. They also said will declare an inclusive government that will remove all current public concerns and criticisms.
Our country is facing numerous challenges, mainly poverty. Furthermore, the country has just left behind a crisis. Now security is restored to all parts of the country. So we declared this caretaker government to manage the urgent in a better way. We will, of course, declare an inclusive government soon.
We want security and don't care who brings it to us. If they are right, the Taliban must help us go back to our village in northeastern Badakhshan. I also ask the Taliban to avoid any further violence in the country by establishing an inclusive government.
Besides local reactions to the declaration of Taliban's government, some states, including China and Uzbekistan, have welcomed this recent move of Taliban in terms of declaring and acting cabinet ministers. Some other countries, however, insist that the only legitimate government in Afghanistan will be the one which must take power based on the will of the people of Afghanistan. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
The visit of Qatar's foreign minister is the latest in a series of visits undertaken by foreign dignitaries to Pakistan in recent days. Following the visits of foreign ministers of Germany, Italy, UK and Netherlands, the visit of Qatar's top diplomat also focused on Afghanistan. His visit comes just days after the Afghan Taliban announced an interim government that drew criticism from certain Western countries for ignoring the demands of inclusive setup. Speaking at a joint news conference, Pakistani Foreign Minister Shah Mahmood Qureshi said the immediate priority must be the well-being of the people of Afghanistan.
And the most important thing that we both agree to is that we have to protect the interests of the people of Afghanistan. And for that, their safety, their security, stability, and to ensure that this Afghanistan, you know, does not become an arena for, you know, for proxy wars.
Since the Taliban took over, there have been fears of economic meltdown as the international financial institutions and Western countries suspended the assistance.
Humanitarian situation and humanitarian assistance should be independent from any political progress, because we believe that the Afghan people deserve to be helped, deserve to be supported, despite what's happening in the political landscape.
The Qatari foreign minister said the inclusive government is important for the unity of Afghanistan. The interim government announced by the Taliban was contrary to the commitment they made earlier that the political dispensation would be inclusive and broad-based. The interim government is set to take oath on the 20th anniversary of 9/11 attacks in the United States.
Many countries are closely watching the Taliban whether they live up to the promises. But Pakistan and Qatar maintain that the world community should not take any steps that may aggravate the problems for the people of Afghanistan. Kamran Yusuf, Islamabad.
Palestinians organized several rallies in the Gaza Strip in solidarity with Palestinian detainees in Israeli jails, where tensions mounted as the Israeli regime began to practice a brutal crackdown on Palestinian prisoners and transfer them to new facilities. Palestinian inmates set fire to cells protesting the Israeli violent measures against them that have doubled after six Palestinian inmates escaped Jalbu prison early this week.
Palestinian inmates in Israeli jails have been facing a war crime, especially after the heroic escape by six Palestinian inmates from Jalbu prison. Israel has adopted violent measures against Palestinian detainees, including solitary confinement.
Palestinian resistance factions called prisoners to resist these attempts to transfer them to various facilities, describing the condition in Israeli jails as war crime that requires urgent move to protect the Palestinian detainees. Palestinian Prisoners Club warned that tension would escalate between Palestinian detainees and the Israeli regime over the relocating of some detainees from the Islamic Jihad movement, as most of the six inmates are affiliated with the group.
The Palestinian resistance has a clear message that any Israeli attack threatening the lives of the prisoners will lead to serious consequences, and the Israeli regime will pay a heavy price for any violation. Our Palestinian resistance is ready to defend our detainees. Also, it's a national Palestinian duty to provide safety for the six heroes who have escaped the Israeli prison.
Palestinians called the international community and human rights groups to make serious actions in order to protect the Palestinian detainees from the Israeli violence.
We hope that all Palestinian detainees will be free soon. We are here to support our inmates. We won't remain silent amid the international community's apathy towards the issue. We will raise our voices against the international conventions that are only written on paper with no practical results.
Six Palestinian inmates escaped from the high-security Jilbul prison in northern parts of the occupied territories on Monday, prompting a massive manhunt by Israeli army.
Along with its manhunt for six Palestinian detainees, the Israeli army has practiced violent measures against detainees inside jails. Palestinians here say they can't remain silent, as the prisoners' issue is among their top priorities. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
The British government has come under renewed condemnation after failing to honour their pledge to define Islamophobia 2 years after making the initial promise. With MPs and critics all condemning the lack of action amid rising Islamophobia across the UK, an all-party parliamentary group on British Muslims created their own definition of Islamophobia in 2018, describing it as a form of racism.
Islamophobia is rooted in racism and is a type of racism that targets expressions of Muslimness or perceived Muslimness.
Regardless which political group makes the definition, grassroots British Muslim groups are concerned over what they see as an establishment-pushed definition.
The best case scenario for this definition of Islamophobia would be one that forces the government to critically self-reflect and critically analyse its policies and policies of previous governments that have led to Islamophobia. I do specifically mean the so-called counter-extremism policies, which have just been a thinly veiled excuse to surveil the Muslim community. And these policies have had such detrimental impacts on the mental and physical well-being of the Muslim community. It's so likely we're going to have a watered-down definition that is nothing more than empty words. Why? Because there's been no engagement with the grassroots of society. There's been no engagement with organisations like ours, like MPAC UK, or CAGE, or MEND, or, critically, active massages like Lewisham Islamic Centre. There's been no engagement with organisations like these which have had to deal with the mess created by 20 years of suspicion and policies and institutionalized Islamophobia.
Some have already begun to adopt the definition, including the opposition Labour Party. However, accusations of Islamophobia within Labour remain, despite its implementation.
A lot of scepticism still surrounds this definition, with many fearing that it will ultimately fail to serve the community effectively, if at all. However, while MPs continue to procrastinate on the issue, Islamophobia remains a very real and persistent threat on both a street and systemic level. Robert Carter, London.
For the first time in 10 years, the Syrian army has entered Dar al-Balad in Daraa city. This is an implementation of a long negotiated deal with armed men that collapsed many times because of their violations. 9 checkpoints for the Syrian army have been established to ensure security after 900 armed men reconciled and surrendered their arms. Russian military police is also there, patrolling and supervising the deal's implementation. The Syrian flag was also raised on Al-Manshiya police department inside, signaling the return of law and order to the area.
فاليوم احنا نعود.
Today, Daru al-Balad returns to Syria with efforts of people and security forces. Reconciliation talks have been successful. The armed forces and police have entered the town and 9 security checkpoints have been established.
The government's control over Dar'a al-Balad will lead to the reopening of public institutions and providing basic services to the residents as well as reconstruction.
As you can see, security and stability have been restored. The town has a strategic location along Syria's border with Jordan. The restoration of public services is highly important for the residents of Dar'a al-Balad.
Meanwhile, Al-Mukhayyam Quarter remains under the control of armed groups who refuse any peaceful deal with the government, similar to some villages west of Dar'a. Thousands of people who left the town before a peaceful deal were allowed to return to their homes, marking the end of yet another chapter of an armed conflict in Syria. The military regaining control of Dar'a al-Balad is a testament to what Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has said time and again, that the army is determined to retake every inch of Syrian territory. After 10 years of war, the government continues to prioritize peaceful solutions to end any conflict like the one here in Dar'a al-Balad. Hamad Ali, Dar'a al-Balad, southern Syria.
The healthcare system in Yemen is deteriorating due to the ongoing Saudi blockade that has led to a harsh shortage of fuel. Sana Health Bureau said 100 health facilities had to stop providing health services partially or completely due to their inability to generate power anymore.
The fuel cuts in our country due to the blockade and aggression have affected the ability of health facilities to provide the necessary health services to our people. Our hospital has been negatively affected so that we have no way but to increase the charge of our services, and this constitutes an additional burden on Yemenis, especially amid the war and siege.
A Sabaim maternal hospital in Yemen's capital Sana'a used to have 45,000 liters of diesel each month as a grant from the World Health Organization. However, the world body, the hospital said, has stopped its fuel grant due to what it says financial problems.
We are Sabaim Hospital in Sana'a. It is the referral hospital for maternity and the childhood disease. Before we received oil from the WHO during 2021, the amount of the oil received to the hospital is decreased to the fourth the amount already we receive it. It is big catastrophe. It will lead to the death of the many child and woman, especially that admitted in the ICU, in the nursery, and the OT. Here in the hospital, we decrease most of our services to decrease the use of the electricity.
Earlier, Yemen's petroleum company said only 3 oil ships were allowed to arrive at Hudaydah port since the beginning of 2021, covering only 3% of what is required to fulfill the basic needs of Yemenis. The Saudi war and the blockade have led Yemen to the world's worst humanitarian crisis, according to the United Nations.
Yemen's healthcare system is on the verge of collapse as a result of the Islamic Saudi war and the blockade. Yemenis also blamed the United Nations for their suffering, saying the world body should take real measures against the continuous Saudi violations of their rights. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kHz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat, or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Advising to follow the instructions of the National Committee on Combating Corona and not participating in the Arbaeen Walk, September 21st, 2020. Well, my discussion is over. I only wish to add something about the issue of the coronavirus. You should not underestimate the coronavirus. When 150 compatriots are lost every day, is this a minor issue? Some people do not have a correct estimate and evaluation about this issue. Imagine that an airplane with 300 passengers crashes every 2 days and all of them die. Is this a minor incident? If we have 140, 150, 170 victims every day, is this a minor tragedy? The cure is in our own hands. Well, as you see, the officials in charge are really sacrificing themselves. Physicians, nurses, managers, and others are all working hard. Therefore, we people should carry out our duties, keeping social distance, wearing a mask, and observing the instructions given, such as washing hands, are necessary tasks that should be carried out.
Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, made the army of reason overcome the army of ignorance.
There is a debate about Arbaeen. Well, some people love Imam Hussein and Arbaeen. It is clear. All of us do. Well, many of you have gone on an Arbaeen pilgrimage, but I have been deprived of it, although I have been willing to go. Although we are away from you, we speak in your memory, from a poem by Hafiz. However, participating in the Arbaeen rally depends on the opinion of the officials in the National Anti-Corona Headquarters. If they say no, and so far they have said no, everyone should follow and obey. If we go to the border to express our love, this is not a good course of action. We can do so at home. There are 2-3 supplications for Arbaeen. On Arbaeen Day, all the people can read the Arbaeen Ziyara in an attentive manner and complain to Imam Hussein, greetings be upon him, saying, O Master of Martyrs, we wish to come, but it was not possible as things are like this. The Imam will pay attention to us and help us remove this obstacle.
The pandemic's effects on efforts to thwart other infectious diseases could exceed the direct impact of COVID-19. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Leslie Roberts, writer. This article is published under the heading, How COVID is Derailing Fight Against HIV, TB, and Malaria. Stay tuned for more. The COVID-19 pandemic has had a devastating impact on the fight against other deadly infectious diseases, according to a report that compares 2019 and 2020 data on HIV, tuberculosis, TB, and malaria in more than 100 low and lower middle-income countries. The assessment was conducted by the Global Fund, an international organization that funds efforts to tackle these three health challenges. COVID-19 has been the most significant setback in the fight against HIV, TB, and malaria that we have encountered in the 2 decades since the Global Fund was established, writes the organization's executive director Peter Sands in an introduction to its results report 2021. As countries went into lockdown and resources were diverted to combat the pandemic, prevention, testing, and treatment services for all three dropped precipitously, although the impacts vary for each. In some countries, says Sands, the knock-on effects on HIV, TB, and malaria could exceed the direct impact of COVID-19. For HIV, the number of people reached by prevention programs dropped by 11%. HIV testing fell by 22%, delaying treatment and contributing to ongoing transmission of the virus. Grace Negulub, an HIV activist in Malawi, is particularly worried about adolescent girls and young women, who account for 6 out of 7 new HIV infections among those aged between 15 to 19 in sub-Saharan Africa, according to the report. In some places, the rollout of COVID-19 vaccinations has also caused problems for HIV-related work. Because of misconceptions about their safety, many girls and young women are hesitant to seek any kind of medical care for fear they will be vaccinated, Negulub says. However, the number of people living with HIV who received antiretroviral drugs increased by 9%, in part because clinics in some countries began providing them with enough medicine to last several months to reduce the need for frequent visits. Efforts to combat TB, the second biggest cause of infectious disease deaths globally after COVID-19, were dealt a more severe blow. TB is also caused by an airborne pathogen, so it lost out because resources such as isolation wards, diagnostic kits, and medical specialists were diverted to the pandemic, says Jamie Tunsing, senior TB advisor at the Global Fund. In countries, the Global Fund supports the number of individuals tested and treated for TB fell by 18%, amounting to about 1 million people. For extensively drug-resistant TB, the fall was 37%, an especially severe impact. Untreated cases will lead to increased transmission and even more deaths from TB than the 1.4 million recorded in 2019. The outlook for malaria remains somewhat stable in countries the Global Fund supports, the report says, without significant setbacks or gains. Although campaigns to distribute insecticide-related nets, currently the best tool for preventing malaria, were delayed early in the pandemic. Countries were quick to adapt, says Scott Filler, who heads the Global Fund's malaria program. When campaigns resumed, many countries switched from dispensing bed nets in public spaces to diverting them door-to-door to avoid crowding. That contributed to a 17% rise in the number of nets distributed. However, the number of people with suspected malaria who were tested fell by 4.3%. A lot of kids did not get tested who should have been, Filler says. Even so, progress against malaria has stalled as unacceptably high numbers, says Pedro Alonso, who heads the Global Malaria Program at the World Health Organization. There are still more than 400,000 deaths from malaria and 220,000 million cases a year. Disease experts worry about the impact that waves of SARS-CoV-2 infections and the emergence of new variants will continue to have on efforts to combat these three diseases. The crisis is far from over, especially with the Delta variant wreaking havoc, says Sands. We really won't get back on track for HIV, TB, and malaria until we get on top of COVID-19.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Aperture.
Welcome back, everyone. We witness how, cloaked in the shadows of the light of public scrutiny, the Bilderberg Group began to form their own self-serving agendas and wielded their immense power and resources to redesign the world in their vision. Yet, today, this old institution faces a new climate thanks to a new wave of savvy investigative journalists who attempt to peel away the secret history and ongoing influence of this organization. Don't go away, here's the next part.
Former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger has been deeply involved in the Bilderberg Group, attending dozens of their meetings over the years and acting on the Bilderberg Steering Committee. Kissinger faces allegations of war crimes for his involvement in the secret bombing campaign that took place in Cambodia during the Vietnam War in the 1970s. It is alleged that Kissinger willfully engaged in the murder of tens of thousands of civilians in various areas of Cambodia, which led to the destabilization of the country into a civil war, resulting in the rise of the infamous Khmer Rouge. Kissinger is also wanted in several countries for his involvement in supporting the Pinochet regime and the CIA-backed coup that took place in Chile on September 11, 1973. Pinochet, who is now facing a war crimes tribunal, murdered the democratically elected President Salvador Allende and started a military junta, which resulted in the kidnapping, forced displacement, and torture of thousands of men, women, and children in Chile. Henry Kissinger actively supported these actions that were taking place at that time, which constituted crimes against humanity. Kissinger was also involved in a controversial study in 1974 called National Security Study Memorandum 200, in which the basic thesis called for an active campaign for the depopulation of several less developed countries to stem the risk for civil unrest.
Are you still giving out orders like Memorandum 200, where you said depopulation should be hell? Sir, just a question. I'm not going to go to hell, because Memorandum 200, sir? Memorandum 200. Just ask him a question about Memorandum 200 that he wrote in April 24, 1974. It's an honest question. Okay. Kissinger, Memorandum 200. Depopulation.
We're on topic now. I came here. We give you the access. You want to burn bridges? You can do that.
I don't want to burn any bridges. I didn't. I wasn't disrespectful. I wasn't accusatory. It was a serious question.
We're on topic.
Okay. I understand that. So, what about the depopulation? I mean, Memorandum 200. Why are you afraid to talk about your depopulation plan?
Why don't you get lost?
Why should I get lost? It's serious.
Sick person.
How am I sick? You're the one committing.
I hope it's the beginning of a whole new epoch of greater and greater coverage. At the same time, we're in danger because of their designs on the internet. This could also be the high watermark. It really depends on who stands their ground and what the fight will be. Because, of course, we've just broke last week. People from the European Commission, the Dutch woman Neelie Kroes, wants a mandatory internet ID for Europe. Cybercom was launched only 2 years ago. We saw the Stuxnet virus, admittedly engineered from the U.S. and Israeli and other related allies to use against Iran and so forth. on that pretext, they want to take greater and greater control of the web. The United Nations also trying to have a reach over the web.
The Bilderberg Group include many prominent members of the internet and computing world, including National Security Agency Director and Chief of the United States Cyber Command, General Keith B. Alexander, co-founder of Facebook, Chris Hughes, founder of PayPal and Chief Facebook Investor, Peter Thiel, Executive Chairman of Google, Eric Schmidt, founder of Amazon, Jeff Bezos, co-founder of LinkedIn, Reid Hoffman, Vice President, European Commission, Commissioner for Digital Agenda, Neelie Kroes, Chief Research and Strategy Officer, Microsoft Corporation, Craig J. Mundy, and many others.
More and more, we're seeing the Iron Curtain of media censorship on Bilderberg and the shadow government, shadow elite, pulled back. So we're seeing Bilderberg basically try to pass the baton off to younger people right now, a bunch of tech folks, Google, Facebook, and others, hoping that the police state tech grid can protect their criminal activity. They're trying to push a global bank as the solution to all our problems that they created. They're openly trying to push more police state systems. They want to end internet freedom. They want to bring in internet IDs.
The mainstream media is no longer mainstream. The alternative is taking over, and they're trying their damnedest to either restrict or shut down the free internet as we know it right now.
The increase of internet-based media has been closely correlated with the decrease of traditional forms of media, such as newspapers and television, which have been monopolized by members of the Bilderberg Group. In their efforts to maintain the control of information globally, influential figures of the media have been routinely invited to participate in the conferences over the years. Peter Mansbridge of CBC's The National attended the meeting in 2010 and has maintained their strict rules for secrecy ever since. Fellow Canadian Heather Reisman is the CEO of Indigo Books, the largest book supplier in Canada, and she is a member of the Bilderberg Steering Committee. In 2005, Reisman founded the Hesseg Foundation, which provides grants to former lone soldiers in the Israeli Army to pursue post-secondary education. A lone soldier is an individual who is not from Israel, but chooses to fight in the Israeli military. Other media moguls and organizations that have attended the Bilderberg meetings over the years have included Rupert Murdoch of News Corporation, Andrew Knight of News Corporation and The Economist, Ted Turner of Time Warner and CNN, Charlie Rose, Donald Graham of The Washington Post, and Canadian media baron and former Bilderberg Steering Committee member Conrad Black of Hollinger International and The Telegraph newspaper. While all of these powerful media organizations have been present at Bilderberg meetings over the years, there has remained a media blackout all across the board regarding coverage of this group.
Hi. I was just wondering what your opinions were. You talk a little bit about it in the book of the influence of the Bilderberg Group on the mainstream media, or on just the influence.
The individuals are influential, but their influence isn't magnified by Bilderberg. I went for 20 years. Mm-hmm. It's just a talking shop, and they're almost always wrong, by the way. They didn't see the end of the Cold War coming. They didn't see the economic crisis coming. They're very interesting meetings. They're very interesting people, but they're not coherent. They aren't a group that meets other than for 3 days a year, and the composition of them changes all the time, except for about 30 of us who are on the steering committee.
And how come?
Don't buy into these conspiracy theories. It's rubbish. All they do is talk to each other. I was on that conference circuit for 20 years, the Trilateral Commission, and I went to all of them. And look, it was fine while it lasted, but I'm getting too old for that. I'm getting tired.
Okay.
You know.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay. Right. But there's no conspiracy in any of them.
No.
Okay. No, there's no.
How come you never hear about it in the media? Like, I only read about it in your
book. They don't allow the media.
No.
But in order to encourage people to talk frankly, which you do, you get good, frank sessions. But there's no meeting of the minds.
Okay. All right, thank you.
fellow Hollinger International Board of Directors member, Marie Jose Kravis, has made significant inroads since being invited to Bilderberg by Conrad Black in 1989. Marie Jose is the wife of Bilderberg member Henry Kravis and has been a member of the Bilderberg Steering Committee for over 22 years. At the trial of the now-defunct media baron Conrad Black, Marie Jose Kravis testified against him, providing evidence for the prosecution. Other prominent Canadians who have attended the Bilderberg conferences include former Prime Minister of Canada Lester B. Pearson, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, Jean Chrétien, Paul Martin, and Stephen Harper. Many other influential Canadian politicians and business leaders have also attended the secret meetings, including former NDP leader Bob Rae, former Liberal Party leaders Stéphane Dion and Michael Ignatieff, former Premier of Ontario Mike Harris, former Premier of New Brunswick Bernard Lord, former Premier of British Columbia Gordon Campbell, the Premier of Alberta Alison Redford, the Chief of Staff for Prime Minister Stephen Harper, Nigel S. Wright, and Power Corporation of Canada CEO, Paul Desmarais Sr. In fact, nearly every Canadian Prime Minister back to Pierre Elliott Trudeau has worked for Power Corp.
In 1996, you were at the Bilderberg meeting, and also there was Jean Chrétien and Paul Martin.
I don't know if I was at that meeting. I've only been to a few of them, but I... Bilderberg and Trilateral are not really think tanks. They're simply individuals who get together who are from business, the political world, the media, others, and discuss ideas. And they influence each other through that.
Shortly after Dan and Steve got back from the Bilderberg meeting in Chantilly, I decided to file some Access to Information Act requests for information on both Alison Redford, the Premier of Alberta, and for Nigel S. Wright, who is the Chief of Staff for Prime Minister Stephen Harper. I received two notices. One was for Nigel S. Wright, and it actually revealed very little. They just said that they didn't have any record of him having attended the Bilderberg meeting in Chantilly, even though he was on the official attendees list. In 2011, the Harper government decided to amend the Access to Information Act and Privacy request forms, making it so that anybody that was on the Prime Minister's cabinet was exempt from releasing any personal information. In the case of Alison Redford, the Premier of Alberta, I did receive actually quite a big disclosure from their Executive Council office in Alberta. 31 pages were disclosed to me just the other day. All sorts of different pages have notices to destroy these emails, do not release this information to the public, do not release any information about your travel itinerary prior to attending the meeting. But a lot of the stuff is redacted. A lot of this information is redacted out. That's cited under different sections of the Privacy Protection Act, which is goes hand in hand with the Access to Information Act request. So any other information that was in there about other people has been redacted out. There's also a page in here that describes the nature of the meetings off the record. Fruitful discussions are enhanced by an atmosphere of mutual trust in which participants can express themselves freely. All discussions are therefore private and off the record. The press is excluded from the meetings. A list of participants will be released to the press on the eve of the conference. There's nothing to hide. If you're doing good things, you don't have anything to hide. There's only something to hide if you don't want people hearing what you're saying. That's the only reason to say it off the record, is that you wouldn't want to be quoted on something that could be damaging to your career.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment.
How do you feel about secrecy in government?